Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, welcome to our 12 Traditions Workshop. The set-aside prayer has been changed just a little bit to acknowledge that this is our intent, traditions, not steps. So if you have the format, follow the format. If you don't have the format, get a format. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and you for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet AA Tradition, How It Developed, by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be as secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in a few minutes of meditation on that purpose, that is, why we are here. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are here to talk about our second legacy, unity, and to review the 12 traditions. Crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. The primary document that you'll need for this, there's two or three actually sources that we use for the assignments, the 12 and 12, the AA 12 and 12. If you don't have an AA 12 and 12, you need your own copy of the AA 12 and 12. I have plenty, all right? I don't make any money on it. You know that. It's a pass-through. It includes the tax. It's $10 for the large print. And please get one. If you plan on doing the traditions or having a supplement to the steps, get one. Thank you. Please.
Can I be marking in it?
Oh, no. Let me take care of my announcements, Jan. Thank you. So the pamphlets that you need also is the illustrated. It's kind of like a cartoon thing, and it has the traditions kind of very simply put, and it's wonderful. Although it's simple, it's very graspable. So make sure that you get one of those. I did hand them out here. Thank you. I did hand them out here when... we were here last week. If you weren't here last week, there was a lot of material that was handed out as an orientation.
This is what we have back there.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, this should be handed out. Well, we'll do it next time.
Okay.
So we don't have any more illustrated there?
No.
Oh, well, we'll have to get some more of those. Unless you can find them at a central office that you're familiar with. Also, the AA Tradition brochure, How It Developed, we have a supply of those. And then the language of the heart, I have ordered more, but we are out of those unless you have one or could borrow one. But the primary document is the 12 and 12, and then there's lots of reflective questions in the assignment sheet. So there's a format and assignment sheet, which there's 12 of them because there are 12 assignments. The Grapevine article, which is 12 sets of questions, one set for each tradition. There's a set of worksheets, and the way I'd like to recommend that you use those worksheets is that you have the blank worksheet for Tradition 1 in front of you tonight so that you could be asking yourself when we're talking about Tradition 1, what does it say, what does it mean, how does it apply to me, what is my experience? It's kind of a blank worksheet so that you can be engaged with us even though you're not necessarily participating. And then there's a list of books and resources and reference material. And that's all was part of the original package handed out last week with the orientation information and instructions, which I'm not going to go back over. We gave an orientation concerning some of the comparisons that I've heard or read or thought about between the steps and the traditions, or some of the reasons for the traditions. And I would like to sort of warm up each night that we get together with a few more observations about that. First of all, the 12 steps are the 12 principles of recovery, and the 12 traditions are the 12 principles of unity. If you have a mental image of unity being one body, I believe it will help you understand how the traditions work, what their purpose is, and how each tradition contributes to that particular aspect of unity. So did anybody look up the word unity and have a definition? Please, George. One or united, yep.
Also, concord, agreement, harmony, the quality of being one in purpose, sentiment, affection, or the one.
Harmony or being one in purpose. I won't repeat it all, but that's the essence of it.
Yes, something considered complete in itself, a single, separate thing.
Something complete in itself, all right? A whole, that's important. W-H-O-L-E, right.
Especially a complex that is a union of related parts.
A complex that is a union of related parts, that's especially good, right.
An arrangement of parts or material that will produce a single harmonious design.
Harmonious design, that's got the flavor of it, yeah. Continuity of purpose and action. Yeah.
That gets into law, math. The unity is the three principles of dramatic instruction.
Okay. All right. Good. Thanks, George. I saw another hand pop. Yeah, Michael? Agreement with consent of all. Sort of a unanimity. All right, that would be like the group conscience. Yeah, we'll come to that in a little bit, please.
Continuity without change, unity of purpose.
Continuity without change. Good, thank you. So, yes, Bonnie.
From the 12 and 12 dictionary, being as one, singleness of purpose.
Singleness of purpose, that's going to be part of a tradition. And being as one, it's a key concept.
As one in agreement regarding our primary functions of function.
Primary purpose. All right? Good. Yep. So the word unity comes from the Latin, and you'll hear it tonight maybe more Latin than you've been used to hearing because we're looking at the definitions of words. And, of course, our language came from the Latin language. Latin meaning like in Rome 2,000 years ago, all right? The word unum means one, the number one, total uniformity or singleness of purpose or one entity. Now, here's the mental image that I think really helped me understand what the tradition's purpose is. It's a set of principles to maintain the wholeness and the health of the one body, the corporate body, the spiritual body. And let's just assume, be poetic with me, please. Just assume that this is a amorphous person, right? One body, all right? Maybe some legs, maybe a couple eyes, maybe a nose, maybe a mouth, maybe an ear. All right, I'm not an artist. Yeah, right. That's right. Don't quit my day job. I don't have one. So there you go. But the whole point of this is one body. So I have a body which has two eyes. My eye is not more important than my ear, is not important than my mouth, is not more important than my hand, and my wrist and my fingers are not more important than my foot or more important than my ankle. So in AA, we've got a bunch of individuals who have gathered in a group. How does the group hang together? Through guiding spiritual principles. But then there are other groups next door because some of those people didn't like those people in that group and they had a resentment, so they started a new meeting. Right? You know how it goes. And then eventually there's lots of meetings in this geography and in this geography and in this geography and in this geography and in this geography, and these geographies are continents or countries around the world. And so the body of AA, not in the material sense, but in the spiritual sense, is held together by guiding principles so that we just don't blow apart. And Bill very clearly says in some of the literature, as the steps are for the deflation of the individual ego, the traditions are for the deflation of the group ego. All right? So there's a direct parallel here in terms of the dysfunctionality of the individual. Think fourth step. Think instincts gone awry. Anger, fear, dishonesty, secrets, inappropriate sex. That sounds like any good meeting I've ever been to. Right? Joke, come on, lighten up. All right, so that's the point. In the same way, the steps will in fact resolve those problems in the individual by the disintegration of the false self for the emergence of the true self as an individual. The traditions will have the disintegration of the false self of the group, if in fact practiced. All right. So I like this mental, poetic, mystical image that underneath of all these individual people, not only in AA, but in 12-step recovery, there is this energy and this spirit that is the cytoplasm, myoplasm, whatever it is that holds cells together, right? And it's a spiritual sense, all right? The steps are for the intervention of self-reliance, and the goal is unity with God from the steps, right? That's the whole point of the steps. And I said the point of sponsorship is to point the way to God. The steps are not an antidote to alcohol. That's not their purpose. The purpose of the steps is a path to a authentic relationship with the mystery, which is the antidote to the addiction. So as the steps intervene on self-reliance with a goal of union with God, the traditions promote God-reliance with the goal of union with humanity, the unification of us each to one another. That's why I think these traditions are so overlooked. When I announced that I was going to do the traditions, some of my friends said, oh, so it's going to be like six people in the meeting? And I said, no, because it's not traditions in the organizational structure of AA. It's traditions in our personal life and in our relationships. And obviously that was communicated because we have a nice full house. As the steps integrate us as individuals and lead us to dependence on God, the traditions integrate us with each other in the group and allow us to depend on our community, on our fellowship. And that's why this first tradition is so important, because it contrasts our common welfare with our individual welfare, and it's saying, if you get to choose common versus individual, common wins. All right? Common wins. Because if we don't have the group, all individuals will be in jeopardy. It's a subtle but not so subtle, and it's very much, you know, tells you a little bit about the priorities here. Bill Wilson, in his own story on the top of page 14, says, simple but not easy. Simple but not easy. A price has to be paid. It means the destruction of self-centeredness. We must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. That's the formula for the steps and the transformation that takes place. This is the price that is required, the destruction of self-centeredness. And the traditions require sacrifice. The sacrifice of the individual for the common good. And we talked about, those of you who are here, about the Latin derivative of sacrifice. Sacer facere. Sacer, meaning priest or holy. Facere, meaning to make or to do. Sacrifice. That act, that stance, that attitude that makes us holy, sacred, or even holy. W-A-H-O-L-E, if you want to play with words. I give up something when I become part of a group. I give up my individuality in the spiritual sense of being unique. And that's, anybody look up the word humility? Please, Michael. State of being humble does not help. Right. Unpretentious? Unpretentious. Okay. Richard.
Having or showing a consciousness of one's shortcomings.
A consciousness of one's shortcomings.
Modest, unpretentious, to lower pride.
Modest and low what? Lower pride, yeah, the destruction of self-centeredness. Please, Marvin.
A modest or low view of one's own importance.
A modest or, I don't like low view. I don't like that at all. Because that's the stereotype of humility. Oh, shucks, I'm not that good. Well, no, damn right, I am that good, all right? Now, St. Teresa of Avila, a 16th century Carmelite mystic, she says humility is truth. See, that low thing, that's not the truth. That's just your attempt at eliciting more praise. If I don't think enough of me, will you please talk some more about me, so that I can hear it more, please? Joe. A low view of one's importance? How about a correct view of one's importance? All right? And that correct view in my stance is I'm not that important. All right? I'm just really not that important. There are 6 billion people on the planet, really. If they were looking at me from Mars, they wouldn't know I existed. All right? Well, in fact, 6,599,999 don't know I exist. Right? Richard. To remain teachable is excellent. Humility is that sense of open-minded, open-heartedness. Please, David.
The act or posture of lowering oneself in relation to others.
Lowering oneself in relationship to others. I don't like the definition with lower in it. No. See myself as on an even level with everybody. I'm not lower and I'm not higher. I see the truth. I see the reality. I see the perspective.
Right size.
Right size. Good. Yeah, George.
Not self-assertive,
I don't like that, not self-assertive. I don't like aggressive, but I absolutely encourage you all to be self-assertive in the truest sense of the positive of that. Stand for yourself. Don't stand against anything. Stand for yourself. And I believe that's self-assertion. I like that part. Unobtrusive, unpretending.
Unpretending, unassuming.
Unassuming, all right? Yeah, there was one other one there, too.
In a religious sense, to be meek and submissive to the divine will.
See, I just don't like that. Meek and submissive to the divine will? All right? No, I'm ferociously independent, and I love you, God, and I'm going to stand for that. Yeah, I'm not meek and submissive, not one bit. I have the courage to align my will with my understanding of God's will. Now, meek and submissive would be more like what Richard was talking about, and that is the right perspective to align myself. I know I am not God. I'm clear. I did a fourth step. I am not God, but I am not God. I'm as clear about that as I'm anything else. Please.
And it gets worse.
Say what?
And it gets worse in some of the other definitions.
Well, yeah, see, there's a connotation to humility that is just humiliating. Yeah. Listen. Do you know what the Latin word is for to listen? Obedere. That's where obedience comes from. Obedience comes from obedere, to listen. To listen to your boss, to listen to your spouse, to listen to your sponsor, to listen. Doesn't mean you have to comply. But to listen with that open mind and that open heart, that undefended person. This is what happens when you work the steps. There's nothing left to defend because your true self is there. And if you don't like my true self, it says more about you than it does about me. Yeah, Nicole.
This isn't, I didn't get this definition.
You went to my barber. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's
thinking of yourself less.
See, I like that. That's a perspective. That is the turning of the self-centeredness to other-centeredness. Please, David.
So you said you didn't like the word lower.
I don't.
But I'm going to show you how actually it makes sense.
All right, show me, David. Yeah. You mean delusional. Delusional. You can do that. Can you do that? Can you do that? With God. My work never lowered my ego. My work never lowered my ego. My work prepared me for the grace of God to dismantle the need to have the false self-ego. So we don't lower ourselves from my standpoint. We might have the willingness to be lowered. We might have the willingness to act a little bit more in the way normal people act, you know? Yeah, but it's but I understand the spirit of it. Yeah.
That's why I like that word.
Yeah. I hate the word. Yeah. Well, because we have enough low self-esteem. We don't need to foster anymore. Really. In terms of the person's real self-worth. Pamela. Yeah, unselfish. And you got to be careful with that one, because when you think you're unselfish, it may be the most selfish thing that you're doing. Ask any Al-Anon. Well, no, huh? I just wanted to help. Right, exactly, exactly. No, I just wanted to control you to follow my script. Because if you follow my script, we'll all be happy. Yeah, 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 huh? Right, please.
Recognition of self in relation to God.
Oh, see, there. I like this one now, David. Listen to this one. Recognition of self in relation to God. See, there's perspective. Seeing the truth. Well, where does it come from in Latin? Humility comes from the word humus. Earth, it means earth or dirt, common as dirt. Think of the sand on the beach here in Santa Monica. All right? How unique are any one of the grains of sand? None. How unique are the 6 billion people really from a perspective? None. None. I mean, they only last about 100 years. They wear out pretty quickly, right? And so that's what we have, is humility is a perspective that is of the non-uniqueness, all right? The non-entitlement, the non-special. It's the wonderful antidote to narcissism, humility. And we practice acts of humility, which might be humiliation, all right, in order to, in fact, acquire the virtue of humility. Be careful with that one also, though, because anything we do can be, you know, warped. That's the human condition, isn't it? Please, Sophie.
Equalizing ourselves with others.
Equalizing, yeah. That's that same thing, the equality of everybody, you know? That's wonderful. Please, Bonnie. Yeah.
Followed by a sincere attempt to become what we could be, a desire to seek and do God's will.
I really like that. Let me just, if there was more, just hold it. That is a recognition of who I really am and a recognition that I can, in fact, improve to become more in line with God's will. That's really healthy, I think. And that comes from that dictionary, does it?
Yes. That
I it's a big book dictionary, and about 70% of it I like. There's about 30% that I don't think is quite helpful, but there's a lot in there that is helpful. All right, so in the steps, we use guidance through meditation to hear the voice of God. In the traditions, we use guidance through the group conscience to hear the voice of God. All right? There's a real wonderful parallel there in the comparison of the purpose of the steps for the individual and the purpose of the traditions for the group and the groups. Deflation of personal ego is the purpose of the steps for God reliance and deflation of the group ego for unity in the traditions for God reliance at the same time. The purpose of the steps is to stay sober and to help others for individual survival. The purpose of the traditions is for the group survival so the group can help others. Wonderful parallels, wonderful parallels. All right, let's go into the assignment. And this is how it's going to work for us. We're going to look at the assignment, and that's a tradition one. And so that would be the assignment. There's a set of 12. If you don't have it, you'll be able to get it later on after the meeting because we have a nice supply. Now, it does suggest that we use the language of the heart for the first assignment. It's only a page, and you may or may not have the language of the heart. So we'll just hit it a little bit and on the highlights. At the beginning of the section in the language of the heart, Bill had given a talk in Memphis in October of 1947 when he had just crafted the traditions. Now, look at the timeline on that. Alcoholics Anonymous was founded in June of 1935, and in October of 1947, 12 years later, he has come now to grips with 12 principles to help the groups have some unity. And let's see what he has to say there. Well, he certainly talks about the purpose being unity, and it's the antidote for the malignancy which tears us apart, and that is individuality. The traditions are to stamp out individuality in the group in the same way the steps are for the dismantling of the false self of the individual. Those are my words, not from the language of the heart. Humility and unity, those are the two key principles. If humility can expel the obsession to drink alcohol, then surely humility can be our antidote for that subtle wine called success.
Subtle wine?
He's being poetic, Bonnie. Definite principles of group conduct. Let's see. I'm just reading my highlights, and again, I'm on page 71 in the language of the heart. Well, I haven't gotten to the assignment yet. Yeah, thank you. Page 71, this is the preface to the assignment. I always do more than I tell myself or you to do, right? Anything worth doing is worth overdoing. That does get one in trouble. First things will always need to be first. Humility before success, and unity before fame. Now we'll go to page 76. All right, so that's where tradition one, there's a couple paragraphs on tradition one. Are there any highlights on page 76 of those of you who have it and read it and highlighted it that you would like to comment on? Please. Yeah, see, and we said that. So we knew this from both the dictionary work and from our own intuition and from our own experience and maybe from the reading that we did here. Exactly, almost those words. That's right. We're a small part of a great whole. That's humility. I'm a small part. I'm as important as my gifts are important as a contribution, but in the bigger picture, maybe not so much. Any other highlight on that page, please, Michael? We suggest we don't discipline. In another place, Bill says the traditions are not rules and regulations. They're guidelines based on our experience. In fact, in this section, I believe he talks about they were hammered out on the anvil of our experience. So they've been together now for 12 years, and the groups have been meeting all over now the country, basically, by this time. And letters have been pouring into New York with complaints, with suggestions, with shared things, what works and what doesn't work. And they're sorting through all this material. And that's where Bill, as a, how would you say, refiner of all this material, that's not the word I want to, editor, not quite yet, integrate, filter, synthesizer, that's the word I was looking for. He synthesized all of this in an incredibly brilliant fashion and constructed those 12 principles called the traditions out of it. But he said, they're not rules and regulations. They're guidelines based on experience. There are only two disciplines in Alcoholics Anonymous. Listen up, especially if you're a sponsor. There are only two disciplines in Alcoholics Anonymous. One is God and the other is alcohol, and you're either going for one or you're going for the other. Oh, really? Dimmer switch, greased axle, going forward, bringing on the light, going backward, bringing on the darkness. There's only two disciplines, God and alcohol. And you're either going for one or you're going for the other, and he has no qualifiers on that. Pretty amazing stuff, please. Well, you can think that. That's not what Bill said. Well, it may be, but he didn't say it was a discipline. He said pain is this touchstone of recovery, or the humility, or the whatever the conclusion is for the first step. Yeah. Okay. How about page 77? Any highlights on that page that anybody would like to comment on? Oh, yes, Michael.
We cannot really do as we please, though there is no constituted human authority to restrain us.
Okay, so I didn't hear that. Say it again out loud, please, or use the microphone. Oh, he took the invitation. All right. Thank you.
The answer seems to be that we AAs cannot really do as we please, though there is no constituted human authority to restrain us.
There's no constituted human authority to restrain us. We can, you know, as human beings, we can do anything we want. We really can do anything we want as long as we're willing to accept the consequences. And there will be consequences to our actions. All right? We're going to pass the basket. And just for those of you who weren't here last week or who haven't been around for us, we're shooting for $5 per person in the basket. Friends of mine were out last night, and they had friends of their who drank, and the wine by the glass in this restaurant was $12 a glass. I was shocked. I haven't ordered any alcohol in 30 years. $12 for house wine in a glass, by the glass. All right. So I don't feel too bad about asking what Starbucks asks for your cup of coffee for our workshop tonight. But you know, it's not about the money. If you don't have any money, don't put any in, please. Don't take any out, but but don't put any money in. And we get covered, all right? There's plenty of people here that take care of the finances. I passed out a lot of pamphlets. I'm not charging you for those and all the material and everything. The only thing that you pay for are the books. Please.
Yeah, someone said last week you could go to soulwork.net and get the language of the heart, and I did, and maybe it was me, but I couldn't find it. And I really wanted to find it.
Okay. So she couldn't find Language of the Heart. Anybody be able to find it? Johnny, talk about it.
So you go to silkword.net, and in the left-hand column, there will be a link to Grapevine articles. You go into that, and there will be a link to Bill W. articles in the Grapevine. And then there will be a link in that about the
Sounds like about three or four links, all right? Please, David.
It's very confusing, although you can do what he said. I found the easiest thing for me was I just Googled exactly language of the heart.
Google language of the heart.
1947, December, article, Green Mind, and there it opened.
I love technology. That's great. Your time and your frustration is your business and none of my concern. Thank you, David. I'm in a feisty mood tonight. All right, so we're on page 77. Let's see if there's anything else here. We see that without substantial unity, there can be no AA, and that without AA, there can be little lasting recovery for anyone. It's interesting. He didn't mention meetings. All right. So there we go. That's the first assignment. The second assignment is tradition one from the 12 and 12. All right. Now, that was a lot easier for people to have and to read. And I think there's not very much on that either. Just a paragraph, or I mean, let's say a page and a half. Is it 2.5 pages? But let's take a look at the first page, 129. Any highlights on that page that anybody would like to comment on? And I'm going to try not to call on the same people each time, unless, in fact, they're the only ones raising their hands. Please. See, once again, it's talking about this body analogy or metaphor. And in fact, he says quite clearly, we stay whole or AA dies. He says, without unity, the heart of AA would cease to beat. Our world arteries would no longer carry the life-giving grace of God. His gift to us would be spent aimlessly. Back again in their caves, alcoholics would reproach us and say, what a great thing AA might have been. So it's this body analogy also. You know what we didn't do, though, and it's my fault. I didn't bring us. I'm just getting used to the protocol. You had that handout that has the two forms of the traditions on it and the three questions, and I meant to read those right at the beginning so that we know what we're talking about. Here's the short form. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Long form. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward. And I'm very much reminded of the flight attendant warning to you when that little mask she's holding dangles. She said, when we lose oxygen and you get the mask, you put yours on first so that you survive. Then you take care of the other people, right? But the other people then get a chance to survive too. It might not be quite an appropriate analogy, but it's talking about first things first. Well, actually, it's just the reverse, isn't it? Well, scratch that one. But it was a great image. All right. All right. So let's take a look at page 129 again. Are there any highlights on that page? All right. I'm assuming you guys read these things. Come on. Yeah, please.
Ah.
Oh.
So that you
can count on the Al-Anon to come charging in to save me. See, that was so wonderful. Of course, because if the person didn't survive, she couldn't help the other people. So the mask is the steps, and putting the mask on the other people is the traditions. You get a special favor, a new star. All right. Surely there is none which more jealously guards the individual's right to think, talk, and act as he wishes. No AA can compel another to do anything. Nobody can be punished or expelled. Our 12 steps to recovery are suggestions. The 12 traditions, which guarantee AA's unity, contain not a single don't. They repeatedly say we ought, but never you must. All right, yeah, please. Nice and loud, unless you want to come up here.
I love that paragraph when I read it, because one of my first concerns coming in is like the individual and the group and how you balance the two. And is this a cult? And is someone going to have me drink a bunch of Kool-Aid?
Yeah.
So I love the idea that there are suggestions and nobody tells anybody what to do.
Yeah.
And that there's hopefully, like you talked about, a God-centeredness.
Yeah.
That's going on that separates it from other organized institutions.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't revisited the traditions in probably 15 years, and over the weekend I was doing the work, and it just lit me up again. I mean, it's just so got individual spiritual principles all over it. It just was wonderful. Please, David. Yeah.
So when I read that nobody can be punished or expelled,
right?
What is to expel from that meeting?
A disruptive person is not expelled. They're ushered out to have a conversation that makes them very special because they're the center of it. How we reframe it? Now, a healthy meeting is prepared for that. It's not like, ushers, get that bum out of here. No, it's not like that at all. It's kind of like the group conscience of a healthy meeting has prepared for this, and there are two or three people that will politely and respectfully help the person move out of the meeting and then stay there with them. All right? Like we, every once in a while, in my men's stag meeting, we have people who are not alcoholic come in. They're in another fellowship. Or we have a woman wander in because she didn't know that it was a men's stag. We are prepared for that. There are two or three people whose commitment is to stand up, to go out with them into the parking lot, and to stay there until the meeting is over, asking about why are they there, what do they need, what are the resources, what are the alternatives, and being welcoming. All right. I love meetings, for instance, that at the end of the meeting, and there's not many of them, but I'm so impressed with the health of the meeting, where they ask for sponsors. They say, are there men in the room who are willing to sponsor? Stand up. Are there women in the room who are willing to sponsor? Stand up. I love that. That is just so the spirit of things, because how else would a newcomer be able to identify unless you've had some conversations at the break or before or after the meeting? And perhaps some of those people had shared with some resonance for somebody, but they didn't know how to make contact, and here's the invitation to contact them. And if you're not doing that in your meeting, whether it's AA or not, you might want to bring that to the attention of the group conscience, assuming you have one. Yeah, please. Yes.
And he came into the meeting.
Absolutely.
He was totally disruptive.
And all right.
He couldn't be controlled.
Yeah.
And someone called the police.
Absolutely.
And they took him out.
Yeah.
They handled him. They took him away in an ambulance.
Yeah.
But the secretary was so upset about it.
Yeah.
She said that we had done the wrong thing.
Oh.
It was the right thing.
It probably was. But I mean, if you're not there, you don't know.
Right.
And it could go either way. I could see it going either way.
Well,
You know, isn't it interesting? We're discussing about how do you deal with people who drink in a meeting? I mean, how far have we come? I mean, really? Oh, my God. That's priceless.
Two or three people tried to walk them out, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. And, well, here it is. Here it is. This is the classic example without qualifiers
the common welfare before the individual welfare. This is exactly the point. The group must survive even if the individual doesn't. Sorry. All right, please, Nicole. Yeah, sure.
And we will take, we'll ask them to wait outside while we take the precautions to see if they'll allow them or not. We have a rotating format, and one of our meeting formats is sex and intimacy. So we generally say no on that night, but we always have a list of other meetings available in the area.
Nice. They have a list of other meetings available in the area. That's prepared to be helpful. Really. Wonderful. David. Yeah.
And stay with them.
Yeah.
Because I've never heard of that or seen that.
Yeah.
They take them out and then.
Yeah. Goodbye. Good luck. Right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I can't miss my meeting because we're going to be talking about how to help people. No, really, huh? Well, I used to run sales meetings in corporate America, all right? And so a guy would come up to me and he would say, "Herb, I've been a service rep all my life. I want to be a salesman." I said, "Gee, that's really terrific. Go sell something." Because the moment you sell something, you're a salesman. Yeah, exactly. I mean, all right, deer in headlights, I'm not hearing much. But anyway, and so there were people in a sales meeting that would come to the sales meeting rather than be out selling. And I'm saying, don't be coming here to talk about sales if, in fact, you can make sales. All right? So don't be talking about helping if, in fact, you get an opportunity to help. Because the whole purpose of a meeting is to help other people.
I mean, I think that's absolutely
cool. I'm glad you underscored it and highlighted it by bringing it up. Wonderful.
Who came up with that idea in that meeting?
Group conscience. The meeting's been there 50 years. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's a healthy meeting like that. But we don't do the sponsor thing, which I think is incredibly healthy. That's wonderful. I saw a hand pop. Yeah, please.
Jennifer.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
And one thing, I was in a meeting once where someone was very disruptive. She clearly had mental health issues.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kind of communicated to her the rules of, you know, no crosstalk or whatever. And she continued to disrupt the meeting.
Sure. Right.
There's some perspective about, you know, there are 52 of that same meeting every year.
Right, right, right.
You know, in over 5 years, how right. many meetings there are. And so you'd have one person disrupt.
Yeah, yeah. And see, there's the beauty of AA. There's no regulation. Your culture of your meeting is determined by your people. The culture of your meeting is determined by your people. The culture of your meeting is determined by your people. And nobody can tell you right or wrong. That's the culture of your meeting and group conscience. Now, there may be healthy ways and unhealthy ways and appropriate and inappropriate and helpful and not helpful. But y'all, you know, you get to make up your own protocols. Yeah, George. You can use the mic, no?
Hi, George Brown, alcoholic. I've had some delicate balancing. I've been secretary of a meeting at the Marina Center where the format is after the speaker for people to ask questions. And a lot of people are regulars and they know the format as ask questions.
Yeah.
So when people start sharing, after a little bit, they get uncomfortable. And I had a situation where a young lady started sharing, and she seemed to be suicidal. She had 90 days, and she was just going on, and she had some, you know, problems that were not alcohol, and she was going on. And I had to make a judgment between balancing what was obviously her need to share pain and the meeting kind of getting unrestful.
Yeah.
And I let her go on for a little while and then asked her gently about the question, and I got flack from both sides.
Sure, of course. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Don't try to please everyone, all right? You'll only die in the middle of the battle.
Turn it on.
It's on.
Naomi, Alcoholic Al-Anon. I had an experience when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I had my, at the time, three or four-year-old, and I went to a meeting, and it was a women's meeting, and the meeting had started, and I was there with my baby, and, you know, babies make noises, and I was, at the time, very new, very vulnerable, and I was asked to leave the meeting because the baby was being disruptive, and I left the meeting, but I think my question was, that affected me for a few months. I was really upset about it, so sometimes I wonder, and I'm really sensitive about people who come into meetings and they're new.
Yeah.
The comfort, the unity of the group should come first. But is there, I often think, well, do you give a little for the sake of a newcomer and then address it at the end in a gentle way? Or do you just cut somebody off because people are getting flustered?
That would be the question for the group conscience. Yeah. No, that would be exactly the question for a group conscience.
I mean, I tend to waver to be more lenient, but
sure.
I've noticed that there are meetings that...
And I'm aware of healthy women's meetings, especially during the day, that have a designated job, a service position of babysitter. They have a special room. The women can bring their kids and they can put them in the child care area and they can attend the meeting, getting it for themselves and not disrupting other people. But yeah, but see, this is an art, not a science, all right? It's an art form. And here's the one driving word that is the litmus test and the filter through which all decisions should be made. What is the most helpful? What is the most helpful? Of course, it's not black and white, and there's no formula for it. Please, you had a question. Oh, you come to the mic. Good. I'm glad we're doing that. Yep.
I looked up, did you talk,
it's on.
It's on, okay. Did you talk about substantial unity already?
And we didn't. Missed it?
Okay.
So substantial unity,
week,
we did not talk about that word.
Okay.
That phrase.
Last week you mentioned that it had a special meaning in AA, is that right?
Well, I got that from some of the reaction to the word, but we're not there yet.
Oh, all right? We're not there yet in tonight's discussion?
That's correct, I didn't bring it up.
Okay.
Now, you brought it up.
Yeah.
Did anybody have any... Well, did you have some thoughts about that?
Well, I was wondering what it is because, I mean, I looked it up, and it's actually in the dictionary, but it referred to some Aristotelian idea about the unity of the soul or the unity of the person. Okay, so I'm wondering, no, that's not really what we're talking about here, but what is it? Substantial unity as opposed to unity.
Oh, so you're posing a question.
I'm posing a question.
Okay, let's address it since he's brought it up. We didn't get to it on the assignment yet, but it's here. And we talked about humility and unity. And so what about substantial unanimity is a phrase here.
Is it unanimity? Is
I think so.
Ah.
Substantial unanimity is the word here.
Okay.
Yeah. So what do you think it means? Please, Joe. Say it again.
In a voting sense, it's two-thirds.
A substantial unanimity would be voting sense would be two-thirds, all right? Excellent. Anybody else? Please, Marvin.
Milton,
thank you.
Agreement by all people involved.
Agreement by all people, which is a little bit different than that, but I think in AA it would be more in that direction, and that's around the group conscience. They don't try to go for 51% votes. In fact, they really discourage voting in the group conscience process. They're looking for consensus. And substantial unanimity would be
pretty much everybody's in agreement that this was the direction that we will go, even if it takes 52 weeks to get there. Right, we just wear them out. Nicole. Yeah, yeah. Just tilt it down.
Am I short? Hi, Nicole, Al-Anon. Okay, so Al-Anon has recently they've been using it, but it's now being accepted at group levels, which is knowledge-based decision-making at the meeting, the business meeting levels, which encourages and promotes that substantial unanimity in a way that I've actually never seen it. My background is business as the VP of operations. I've always been the head of meetings, and I've never seen anything work quite so unanimously.
Yeah.
Where when it's used in the proper sense, we take into account and we really encourage the minority message in the room. And we talk things out, we reason things out, and we don't expect any closure in a business meeting within one business meeting. And to me, that is what the substantial unanimity is what Al-Anon has created in this knowledge-based decision-making.
Thank you, Nicole. Yeah. Okay. Please, go ahead.
Okay, I'll just ask the follow-up question. So I've been sitting here earlier tonight listening to the discussion on unity, and as I listened, a phrase from a poem came to mind, and it's, united in the strife that divides us. And I'm thinking, okay, that really seems to identify some of the meetings and things that I've been in, but it just points to the idea that unity is not necessarily a static thing, that it's a dynamic phenomenon, and that just like this lady just said here, that, yeah, we don't always all agree, but we're heading in the same place. And it's like, okay, so there's a situation in a meeting where someone comes in and there's a problem, some kind of problem. And it's like, I just love what you said about, okay, yeah, the solution to this is when the group conscience kicks in, because this is where the unity happens. But it's, I don't think there's any, just given unity. I think it's something that always has to be worked for. You know, there always has to be room for differences of opinions, room for serious disagreements, and then, unity emerges from that. But anyway.
Good. Thank you. Joe?
I just want to say, I think the brilliance of Bill Wilson comes in the third legacy procedure, and that talks about the two-thirds voting process. So if you're going to vote on something, you do it five times. So in the essence of keeping it moving and keeping time issue at bay, the first round, two-thirds. If there's someone gets two-thirds of votes, they're elected. If it doesn't happen, there's a second ballot. And if two-thirds doesn't happen in the second ballot, then 20% of the voters or the candidates get kicked or get dropped out. On the third one... Just by not having enough
out of
votes.
Out of the hat.
Yeah, so it's only 20%. They go down.
20% of the candidates, their names are in the hat.
No? No hat yet.
No?
Here's the brilliance. No hat yet.
All right. Well, I'm not sure I want to go into this deeply.
Well,
but how much do you got to go? Because we got a limited on time.
3 minutes. So then the three. I want 2 minutes.
Two.
I'll make it fast. 1 minute. So it goes to the third ballot. Third ballot, then one third. If you don't have one third of the votes, it gets dropped out. Goes to the fourth ballot. Then it goes to majority. The chairperson says, now we have a majority. Do we want to go to a fifth ballot? They say yes, we go to the fifth ballot. If you don't get two thirds, then it goes to the hat. And this is the brilliance of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it goes into the hat. What happens? Someone picks it out of the hat. And who is that? That's the hand of God, because no one picks it but
the last person.
So anyway,
right.
That's...
All right. Yeah. All right. Please. You want to use the mic?
Sure.
Substantial, by the way, while he's coming up to here. Oh, you're going to do that? Go ahead.
You didn't ask us to define unity. You asked us to define substantial
unanimity.
Yes.
And I believe it's the combination of what we're seeking.
Yes.
And substantial doesn't mean all. It generally means mostly or for the most part or wholly. If you combine that with unanimity, which has a consensus in unity, I look at that and say it doesn't have to be perfect. It can be a percentage, more than half. And ultimately, when I'm listening to this discussion and the multiple opinions, when we go back to our purpose, if people in the group conscious are trying to strive for that unanimity, they're not trying to press their individual opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
They're trying to be, I'll say, godlike and try to do what they believe is best for the group or for what they're trying to resolve.
Yeah.
That's why substantial is more than sufficient if those that are present are trying to do it with the right purpose and context.
Yeah, check the motives. That's right. So look again at the Latin derivatives of both words. Substantial comes from substandare, which means to stand under. This is the foundation. And unanimity comes from two Latin words, unum, which means one, and anima, which means soul or spirit. Going right into that, what we just talked about, just one soul, one spirit, that kind of sense and humility. Rob.
I'm Rob. I'm an overeater, pulsive overeater. So I am not familiar with the AA definition.
All right.
I define both
terms. We're talking about dictionary definitions mostly.
So, you know, unanimity is unanimity. Agreement by all people is what I found. So two-thirds of people, that's not unanimous.
Nope.
Three-quarters is not unanimous. It may be good enough. It may be the best you can do.
Yep.
But unanimity is unanimity. So to me, the nuance is in the substantial. And, you know, initially I thought of, I guess the more common definition is about quantity. Substantial means a lot, important.
Yeah.
But there's some other definitions I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, all right.
So I saw, you know, one is concerning the essentials of something, like fundamental, basic, essential. So when I thought about that, I realized how you can have substantial unanimity even while not agreeing on all the details.
Yes.
A group can be unanimous on some underlying principle or basic idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's focus on what we do agree on and let's leave what we don't agree on to the side, you know.
Right.
And that not only can work in a 12-step meeting, but I see how that could work in business, in family.
Yeah.
So that actually, I learned something by looking up the substantial definitions.
Right. And I really encourage, thank you, Rob. I really encourage you to use the dictionary and look at all, like George did, all of the various definitions in various contexts so that you get a feel of and a flavor for and expand your consciousness about it.
Hi. Greg, alcoholic.
Hey, Greg.
Sex and love addict. And
it's all right. We don't need it.
Al-Anon. when I hear substantial unanimity, I want to emphasize that that doesn't mean that you have to go along with what everybody's saying. Because, you know, the guy who came up with God as we understood God, there was one guy who wanted to make that a part of the steps, God as we understood him, you know, and because of that one guy, we have that part in the steps that is really important. And then also I had this experience. Well, I met the guy in central office who was responsible for putting the little G next to gay meetings. And
next to what?
Gay meetings.
And you look in the meeting director, I see. Uh-huh.
And at that time, gays had their own service structure. They were completely separate from Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were incorporated. He came to central office, and he made a speech. They voted against him. He did a minority opinion, and one person changed his vote. They went back into discussion, and they were able to change. And this was like in the 70s or in the 80s, where it wasn't too hot to be gay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and then the last thing I'm going to say is in the concept somewhere it says in matters of grave importance, you have a duty to express your opinion. So
yeah, nice. Very nice. Thank you for that contribution. Right.
I'm Rod, grateful, recovering addict. Just a quick comment.
If you could talk directly into the snow cone there.
Okay, I'll try to.
Thank you.
Is that better?
A bunch better.
Good. Just a quick comment on the purpose of Robert's rules is it's an organized method of conducting a meeting, and two, to protect minority issues. That's it.
Yeah, to protect the minority issues, which would be very relevant here in the group conscience. And if we're not there yet, but we will get to that particular tradition.
Are we on tradition one?
We are still on tradition one.
I was a little bit confused.
All right.
Richard, alcoholic.
Oh, Richard, crusty old.
Careful.
What?
Careful. I'll pull some rank on you. I'm a little bit confused because we're talking here about the stuff that's about the words that are in the second tradition. The word of consequence, it seems to me, in the first tradition, two words, common welfare.
Common welfare.
And that's it. That's what the first tradition
is.
Yeah. This should come first.
Uh-huh.
Everything else is second.
Yeah.
And if a meeting is run in such a fashion, for example, that when someone comes in and is drunk and is not disturbing,
no problem.
What's the common welfare?
Yeah.
The common welfare is for us to see this alcoholic in person amongst us.
Right.
Because otherwise, we don't remember how we bled.
Yeah.
Common welfare.
Yeah. Thank you, Richard. Hey.
Candy alcoholic.
Hey, Candy.
So I wanted to kind of go back to the discussion about the drunk in the meeting, because I've had that in meetings and the police was actually called. And in working with others on page 97, it says, a drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress, not my house. You may have to fight with him if he's violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. And I think that given the fact that we attend, you know, hundreds of meetings, if we manage to stay sober, at some point there'll be a circumstance where somebody goes out of control. I've also been in meetings where people have my favorite thing in real estate and other places, the service dog or the service animal, where the animal gets passed around and walks around the meeting and disrupts the meeting. And it's a difficult one, because how do you take a group conscience on something like that, whereas there's a legal, you know, binding situation, but it is disturbing the meeting? That was a question to you, actually.
Yeah. No, it's not a question for me. It's just a question, right? So we raised the question. We have 10 minutes left, so I want to protect it with no more questions. All right? No more questions. We can pick it up next time, but I want to finish kind of going over what we're doing here, and we'll pick it up next time. You've got come back next time, and we'll do some questions, but we need to sort of manage it so that we get through some of the substantial stuff. This isn't going to be an in-depth discussion, obviously, like the 12 steps are over a year period. We have 1 week per tradition. So keep that in mind. This has been very lively and a wonderful experience and a good exchange. But we want to keep in mind that we want to do a review of all of the assignments so that people have a sense of it and can make a contribution to it. And we don't want to hold group conscience here on specific situations, even though sometimes the specific situations are wonderful illustrations of the principles that we're using. So I'm absolutely not discouraging that. I am encouraging us to just use our common sense and perspective on what the purpose of it is, and that we have about an hour to do it. So we have tradition one from the 12 and 12, page 130. Anybody have any comments on the highlights there in page 130 in the 12 and 12?
I do.
Please. Nice in the mic, right. Please.
There was a couple of lines right in the middle of the page. Says most individuals cannot recover unless there is a group. The last sentence in the same paragraph says the group must survive or the individual will not. Now, I'm not saying I disagree with those words,
sure,
but just to be a little bit provocative, I always thought AA worked as one alcoholic working with another alcoholic. So That's a one-on-one situation.
Yes.
And what's described in, you know, chapter 7 in the big book. So how does the group become the essential, the thing that's essential to
recovery? I think you're mixing your purposes here. The essential purpose of AA is one alcoholic talking to another, but that's not a group. So what's the function of a group? The group is an entity in itself so that the individuals come. That's why we have the guidelines for behavior within the group. And so I don't see any conflict in that. It's just a different context. Betsy.
Okay, so that first paragraph, those who look closely soon have the key to this strange paradox. I think a lot of this is about paradox, substantial unanimity. That's a paradoxical statement. So accepting paradox and the complexity of that is important. I also really love the next couple of lines. The compulsive member has to conform to the principles of recovery. His or her life actually depends upon obedience to spiritual principles. That's just...
Well, and just to go a little further, I know we're taking sentences out of context, but these are some of my highlights. It says in the middle of that page 130, no personal sacrifice is too great for the preservation of the fellowship. How best to live and work together as groups became the prime question. The issues are the same as the step 4 inventory issues, wealth, power, and prestige. I think related to the model that I use for step 1, body, mind, and will. The survival from a wealth and security standpoint, the power from a control standpoint, and the prestige from a sense of esteem and value and context for your personal life, maybe. How about page 131? Any highlights or comments on page 131? Please, John.
Times tonight, the anvils of experience.
Yeah.
And that meant a lot to me because I see the anvils as each individual being extremely stubborn and heavy and just dragging along, and that our experiences sort of got hammered out on those. But the other part is Eddie Rickenbacker gets mentioned in there, and I did a little research on Eddie.
Excellent.
Because I don't know Eddie. But the thing that's amazing is when I look at the stuff that happened in Eddie's life, I can have a little view of me being a small part in a great whole, because they were out in the middle of the Pacific 22 days, and they survived it. And I guess just because they all worked together to get through those 22 days. That was a great little story.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, and I'm glad you brought in sort of the historical background to show the relevance of it in terms of the way Bill used it. Obviously, it was a story that was well publicized in Bill's day, so he didn't spend a lot of time giving much information on it. Richard.
We must hang together, we will surely hang separately. So I looked it up.
Yeah.
This was done during the time that the 13 colonies were scrapping amongst each other. Each was doing its own thing, and they were all making their own rules about how they were going to subsist and survive and so forth. And Ben Franklin said, "We must all hang together, or we assuredly we shall hang separately."
We must all hang together, or most assuredly we will hang separately. Ben Franklin, concerning the war for independence. Wonderful. Thank you, Richard. All right. So I passed out a handout. We'll typically have handouts almost every time. And this is one that gives you a perspective on the entire 12 traditions viewpoint on principles. Now, there's nothing official about this. This comes from my experience and the people that I've worked with, and I think I mentioned to you that I engaged a tradition sponsor for a year, and he took me through the traditions in the same way that somebody would take somebody through the steps, All right. And I hammered this out from that experience, and you can see that the traditions are an attempt to deal with the individual or the group weakness of selfishness and individuality, the principle being unity, and the results of that for the individual and the group action is respect and partnership. We will be using this each time that we finish a tradition. We didn't get much of a chance to take a look at the traditions illustrated. Does anybody have any highlights or comments that they would like to make on that? We have about 5 minutes we're going to use quite tightly here, I hope.
Bonnie Alcoholic.
Hi, Bonnie.
There's no page numbers, but on tradition one, middle paragraph, it talks about self-indulgence. It threatens the very basis of our society, the unity of the AA group. For self-righteous gossip can damage the mutual trust that is vital to every group, and a compulsive talker can ruin the effectiveness of the discussion meeting. It's that self-indulgence, that by myopic view of myself and what my importance. I find that sometimes, for example, people texting in the meetings or chatting in the meetings while somebody else is talking, it takes away from that primary purpose, which is to be there and the unanimity of the group and to be able to participate as a listener as well as somebody who's sharing.
So yeah.
I found that interesting.
Well, thank you for that. And you just pressed the button. Now, I've mentioned that I'm technologically challenged. I don't apologize for it. I make a statement. That's just what is, and I'm trying to do the best I can to enter into the 20th century, let alone the 21st century. But be that as it may, I don't bring my phone into a meeting. My phone goes off and it stays in the car. Why would you bring a phone into a meeting? And why would you leave it on in a meeting unless you're a surgeon or the Attorney General of the United States or the General Commander of the fleet in Afghanistan? Why would you? No, it's a rhetorical challenge question to you. And we'll bring it up later on. But I'm not looking for an answer, and I'm not looking for a line of people to talk to me afterwards on that question either. All right? That's just a personal kind of a button pressed. But George has something.
Yeah, you know, something struck me in here. It talks about we shed a few bits of the big ego. And, you know, it may lead us to take other members' inventories and to gossip about their supposed shortcomings. And it may lure us into hogging the floor at every discussion meeting. And this is something I see way too much of. And I wonder whether maybe I should underline this page and give it to those people.
Oh, just after your Al-Anon meeting, do that. Yes. After the group conscience tells you that it's okay. That's right. Each of the other 11 traditions explains one specific way to protect the unity. The key to the traditions' understanding is unity, common welfare. All right, unity. And now each of the traditions in the balance, 2 through 12, are going to have some aspect of supporting unity. This we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on AA unity depend our lives and the lives of those to come. We are here to talk about let's go back over here. Our respective 12-step fellowships help their members maintain their personal recovery and encourage them to offer to share their recovery experience freely with others who may have a similar problem. Oh, that's what I heard. That's interesting. Okay, so the next workshop next week will be based on Tradition 2. The assignments are quite straightforward. I think we'll tighten up a little bit the dialogue on each of the highlights on each of the resources and sources so that we can, in fact, talk about our response to the questions that have a more reflective nature after the readings. We did touch on the definitions, but we didn't get to reflect on your personal experiences with applying them in AA at work, in your personal relationships with family and friends. And I think there'll be a real benefit to that. So we will, in fact, do tradition two next week, but we'll also incorporate some of the feel of tradition one if we have time toward the end, which may be wishful thinking on my part, but be that as it may, and I'll have some more of the language of the heart, but you've been given a couple suggestions as to how to find that material. And as you could tell, although it's nice to have, it's not critical. There's all the other material is print plenty for grist for the mill. All right. Make sure that you read the short and long form of the traditions before you start doing the resource reading and then obviously answering the questions. Spend some time. This is a meditation and this is a 12-week retreat. This is a 12-week retreat, an opportunity for you to review some spiritual principles that you might not have looked at ever, or it's been a while, like me. And it can be quite an enriching experience. And we'll keep that in mind when we're sharing next week also. Please join me in the prayer of St. Francis, which, as you know, I call the prayer of transformation. And that transformation is initiated in the steps, but fostered in the traditions. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. Thank you really for your participation, and I look forward to some more of it next week.